ocean. I let love down the drain. There's the pitch, slow and steady. Hey guys, this is Rashad Field and this is for the Shoutcast. And everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them now. Sometimes I wish that I had put out like a call, like on a show that people actually listen to, like the Dunstief or Garrison Keillor's Lake Wobegon Days, where people could take that song, the chalupa song, and put a tune to it or sing it or perform it in any way they wanted. And then I'd use those submissions for like the theme song of the podcast. Like every week I would have a different version of that. Hindsight being what it is. I wasn't going to record today. I've got stuff on my mind. I don't know that it's wise to bring it up. Anyhow, I've mentioned before several occasions about how podcasting is free therapy for me. When I'm upset, when I'm angry, when I'm depressed, when I'm... Well, I almost said when I'm horny. I don't think that has ever helped. But it is. It's. I get to talk. I get to pretend that there's somebody listening. And it helps. I mean, it's not a miracle where I go from 0 to 10 or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I remember there was this episode called like Gray Skies Ahead or some shite like that. And I started recording because I was kind of unhappy and depressed. And like 6 or 7 minutes into it, I said, I'm not really sure why I felt bad. There's no reason. I don't feel bad now. And it was just kind of amazing that it could do that. So, yeah, once again, I'm grateful that I have a podcast. Today, I'm driving. I just got in the car, and I looked at the clock because it's pitch black out, and it's not late. 2 or 3 weeks ago, it would have still been light at this time. It's just we've gotten to that point of the year where the days get shorter, gets darker earlier, and summer is over. And by the time this sees air, who knows, summer might be right around the corner again. Yay! I love summer. I love it. And I should love fall because Halloween is in the fall, but I don't because every single day is a reminder that winter is coming. And that's, you know, kind of our stark words. I hate winter. My buddy Jeff and I, before Jeff and I didn't get to hang out anymore, we were watching this movie that Joss Whedon wrote called In Your Eyes. And the main male character lived in a trailer out in the desert, like on a butte or something, on a mesa, let's say. And he had no neighbors except for coyotes, as far as the eye could see. And Jeff was just like, oh, can you imagine the hell of living there? And to me, it was just like, yeah. That seems kind of nice. I'd like that, actually. My uncle, years ago, lived out on the outskirts of Las Vegas. And it was just him in a house with a lot of acres and his dog. He had a German Shepherd called Tigger. And we'd go and we'd visit him. And it was a bachelor pad, you know? And he didn't have neighbors. And it was hot and stark. And he would find tortoises, desert tortoises, on the property sometimes, just walking around. And you're supposed to leave them alone. Even then, I think they were endangered. Now, you know, they'll like put you in Guantanamo for picking one up. But in those days, anytime he'd find one, he'd scoop it up and he'd put it in the yard and, you know, feed them lettuce or broccoli or whatever desert tortoises eat. And I just thought that was the neatest thing. Not just the turtle thing, but the idea of where he lived and what his lifestyle was like. And, you know, I don't know, maybe he was lonely. But I didn't think of that. I only ever saw him when we were visiting him, when he had company. And so, you know, he felt like he had to entertain or he had to put a happy face on or whatever. And so he seemed like he was happy every time we came to visit him. I didn't see him once the visitors were gone, and who knows, maybe it was lonely then. It's funny to ramble, guys. I realize I've been recording 3 or 4 minutes, and I'm just talking. But that's the free therapy, you know? I'm on your dime now. I came into this little psychiatrist's office, and it's as though the doctor said, just talk about whatever is on your mind. And he lets me talk because he knows that I get billed either way. Anyhow, I figured I didn't have a lot of time on this episode, and so I was going to present to you a story that's easily the shortest story I'll ever present on this show. I know it would be crazy to do like a drabble for an episode, like what Norm Sherman does at the beginning. I assume he still does a drabble at the beginning of every episode. I haven't heard Norm's show in a long time, but he used to always start with a drabble. Sometimes he would start with, I think, what they'd call twit fic, which would be like a story that was just the characters that you could fit in a tweet. And perhaps that contributed to me stopping listening to the Drabblecast. But boy, when the Drabblecast was good, it was so good. And I would lay 80 to 90% of that at the feet of Norm Sherman. He's a really talented guy. Anyhow, the story I'm going to present to you is called Unpleasant Sensation. And I'm presenting it to you for two reasons. But the first is that it was the first story that I had published in a book. I mean, podcasts had done my stuff. Of course, I had done my stuff. It was before I had ever self-published anything. But, you know, I had had stuff published before in magazines or online, what do you call them? Publications. Anyway, let me just run it and we'll talk afterward if I have any energy left. Go ahead.
Unpleasant Sensation. The dog knew something was wrong long before I did. He looked around the apartment, eyes darting nervously from corner to corner. Before long, a yellow puddle appeared on the wood panel floor around his haunches. Manitoba? I asked, somewhere between concern and anger. The dog whined and darted across the room and under the coffee table. Wow, I had never seen him do anything like this before. I started to rise to check on my normally reliable pet, but something moved in the periphery of my vision, something on the right side of the room. I looked in that direction, but saw nothing. The hairs on my arms began to dance, as if I were standing in front of a refrigerator. I turned to look at my dog again, to ask him if this was why he... To my left, a shadow moved, the shape of something approaching me. My heart clenched in my chest and my head whirled to see what was moving toward me. Nothing was there. Not anymore, at least. At that moment, I felt an uncomfortable wetness and glanced down to see the stain growing on the front of my pants.
So that's Unpleasant Sensation. Short. Did I not warn you that it was short? I think, and I could be wrong, but I think the word limit on the stories for this publication were 200 words. And fudge, it might have been 100 words, but that's what Norm Sherman does, is 100 words. And I'd never dare put one of those on the show. Although maybe I should. Maybe there should always be a story. I don't know. It was a horror anthology. And I think 200 words was the limit. And as far as I can remember, there were no stipulations except for the word length. And I don't know if the episode Rest Stop has aired yet, but Rest Stop is kind of similar, where it's a guy and a dog, but a person could go crazy analyzing their stuff, saying, well, how much of my stuff has an old man? How much of my stuff has a dog in it? How much of my stuff has urine in it? And, you know, maybe I am a little bit crazy, but I've found that that kind of stuff doesn't help. Anytime I look at my own body of work and I start to think of, well, I've told stories about shapeshifters before, I start to feel like a hack. And that benefits nobody. So I told you that there were two reasons I was presenting this on the show. The first was that, okay, I think it was my first professional sale. Maybe. The first one for a book. But the other was that I had it in audio. Yeah, I'm sorry. I know it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is unpleasant sensation. And it's for you. You can tell everybody this is your schlong. I'm not going to do the it's not a great story. Because, yeah, it's not. But I don't care. Somebody liked it enough to put it in a book. I don't know. I just, the unknown is scary, right? And people far more talented than me have said that anything that you can imagine is scarier than what I can write, what I can come up with. I mean, just between you and me, I think that's hogwash. I think there are people that have really good imaginations, and then there are people who are the rest of the people. But perhaps the story was accepted because it leaves stuff to the imagination. I mean, for me, it was just, you sense a presence. The dog senses it first. And you're just like, what? Why would the dog act like that? And then you sense it. And easily I could take this scene and transplant it into a longer piece. You know, it's always, gosh, how many stories have you read about places that are purported to be haunted, and so somebody goes there to debunk it? Or a bunch of kids hear that a place is haunted, and so they decide to go there so they can feel themselves some bosoms. I personally don't think there's anything wrong with either of those premises. Yeah, okay, they're well-trod paths, but they are tried and true paths. You know, boy meets girl, they fall in love, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back, is the basis for a million stories. But 500,000 of those stories are solid stories. Anyhow, I feel like I'm on a soapbox all of a sudden. And it's strange. You don't, I don't know. I don't usually find myself defending my writing. And I guess I'm the only person I'd be defending my writing from. A lot of times I'm really upset with myself. And it's not always because I deserve it. I can be hard on myself. And sometimes that's fine. If it helps you work harder. If it helps motivate you. But if it just gets you down or makes you give up or makes you look at yourself in the mirror and just sneer at what you see, then it's not helpful at all. I mean, maybe I need real counseling. If I thought it would help, I probably would. This sounds cynical, doesn't it? I'd probably throw a few dollars that way just to see. Hypnotherapy appeals to me. You know, somebody that's just going to try and rewire my brain. You never know. Anyhow, what was I going to say? Oh, okay, so we're talking about unpleasant sensation. There is something to be said for leaving things to the imagination. I have written a couple of stories where something happens and I keep that information from the reader. And I've read stories that do that to varying degrees of success. Does that mean make sense what I'm trying to say? Sometimes I'm like, oh, wow, that's really solid. Other times I immediately assume it's a cop-out and the writer doesn't. The writer was too lazy to come up with a solution. One of my least favorite stories is The Lady or the Tiger. And Stephen King refers to Lady or the Tiger in his writing all the time. It must have been something that really impacted him as a young man, because he brings it up, and because he brings it up, I bring it up now. I remember, like, in sixth grade or seventh grade, like, Mrs. White's class, she did The Lady or the Tiger and read it to the class. And then you got to the end, and that's it. That's the end. It would have been so great if somebody had had the intestinal fortitude to stand up and say, bullshit, that's the end. Was it The Lady or the Tiger? A lot of times I think about going back in time, quantum leaping, like back into my body 30 years ago or 25 years ago or whatever, and having to do all of that stuff again, but with my adult brain knowing what I didn't know then. And I mean, it's a fun exercise for me to think about certain things and how I would do them differently. And I've toyed with writing stories about that, but I always get hung up on 9/11 because I just couldn't live with myself if I didn't try to do something about September 11th, which is just ludicrous. I mean, what could one person do? And, you know, the worst is if you do all of this stuff and you end up getting arrested or whatever, and it still happens, and the conspiracy theorists were right. Yeah, pretty bad. But whenever I've written a story like that where you decide, I'm not going to tell the reader what was behind door number 3, I'm always very cognizant of the times when I've read it and thought, you lazy turd, you never had any idea what was behind door number 3. And so I always come up with the solution. And most of the time I write it down so that I can refer to it even if I'm not going to reveal it to the reader. And I don't know if that makes me a horrible bastard or not. I've never shared any of those stories on this show, but there's one novella that I wrote years ago that Big and I were going to do on the Doonstief. And we got far enough that he printed it out at work. He printed out 2 copies so that we wouldn't have to, you know, try and read it off a screen together. We'd have hard copies of it. And every once in a while, I will find one of those sheets, because I'm a cheapskate and I use that for scratch paper. And I'll think about that. And I was like, gosh, I wonder if that story was good enough that I ought to revisit it. Or I wonder if I should self-publish it or run it on the Rish Outcast. In my mind, it was a pretty good story. But it was one of those where something happens and a bunch of characters don't know what happened. And ultimately, it is never revealed what happened. But I knew. And I don't know if that is cruel or fair or incredibly frustrating. I guess there's only one way to find out. Anyhow, there are ways to do that kind of thing well, and there are ways to do it badly. I guess I wish I wrote more or published more of what I wrote so that I, you know, I could learn these things. But as I've said many times, I've been writing for a long time, guys. And, you know, I still don't know if people are going to like something that I write. As of this recording, I recently published A Sidekick's Journey, which is, you know, the sequel to Birth of a Sidekick. And I had to get the link to it, to post a link to it. And somebody had written a very nice review of the book. And I read the review and I thought that was really cool that they'd do that. But I didn't know if people would respond the way that I responded. Like, I felt like, oh, this is really solid stuff while I was writing it. And I actually ended up moving myself a little bit while I did the audiobook of it. And, you know, before it sounds like I have too big of a head, I found hundreds of lines that I didn't like, or were places where I felt like the dialogue sucked or that I needed to fix something. I mean, that's why my own audiobooks take so long to do, whereas doing an audiobook for something that somebody else has written takes, geez, a fifth as long, an eighth as long. I don't know, I was recording Newfound Fame the other day, and one chapter took me 35 minutes or something like that. And I'm sure when that chapter is edited, it'll be 11 or 12 minutes. And that means that there's 1 minute of usable recording for every three that I recorded. I don't know. What can you say? Anyhow, yes, I should publish more. Yes, I should write more. And should I podcast more? I don't know about that, except for that in the 20 minutes that I've been doing this, I do feel better about what was on my mind when I first started recording. I should share it with you, and I'll probably do a podcast about it eventually. But, you know, everybody has challenges in their lives, and everybody has doubt, everybody has loss, everybody has regret. And maybe as you get older and you gain more life experience under your belt, you're able to deal with that better or more. I just remember the very first time I ever lost something that I wrote, where, you know, as a writer, I'd worked really hard and long on something. And then in those days, you know, you lose a computer, you lose a disc, you lose whatever it is, and it's gone. It's gone forever. And I just, oh, I was so heartbroken. And little did I know that 20 years later, that 25 years later, it would still be happening to me all the time. But, you know, it never broke me up again the way that it did in 1991, I think it was, the very first time that happened. Just, yeah, you know, you get these challenges, you get these roadblocks thrown in your path, and sometimes they knock you down. Sometimes they stop you right in your tracks. Sometimes they discourage you to the point where you're like, oh, I cannot go on. And if you do go on, eventually you're strong enough to jump over the next one, or at least make it through. I don't know. The sad thing about life is that it's always going to throw new obstacles in your path. You're going to get new challenges that you're not prepared for. So I guess that's me trying to depress myself. I don't know. I didn't talk much about unpleasant sensation. But again, it was so short, what can you say? I really only threw it in here because
I want to do more episodes with stories. And I have a lot of really short stories that wouldn't take any time at all to record and present on the show. But I always feel like that's a ripoff or a cop-out or like some kind of compound word that has a dash in the middle. You would never expect Norm Sherman to do his drabble at the beginning of the show and then say, "Thanks a lot, folks. The Drabblecast is produced under a Creative Commons attribution." That was my Norm Sherman impression, but it was actually me doing an impression of Christian Slater, who is usually just a young Jack Nicholson. The Rish Outcast is produced under a Creative Commons attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license. And that means that you can share it and copy it, and there's got to be a third thing you can do. Well, you can download it. You can send it to your friends and or enemies. But you can't take credit for it, and you can't try to sell it. I wonder about that license. Like, there have been a couple of times that I have uploaded a podcast. I upload the show via archive.org because that's how Big Anklevich taught me to do it. And once I figured out how to do it that way, that's how I do it every single time. It was really hard for me in the early days of the Rish Outcast to remember the process and to get it right. In fact, I know people used to say, "Oh, hey, that podcast didn't work," or "it was a broken link," or whatever. And that was because I was trying to do it myself, and I put out so few episodes that I would forget, and I would try desperately to remember how to upload the show and make it available. Hopefully they're all available now, except for those mystery episodes that you could only get if you were a donator. But sometimes I would upload an episode and not publish it. But when I went to publish it, it would say that somebody had already downloaded it. And I thought, "Whoa, but I haven't published it." And I guess simply uploading it to archive.org, people can find your podcasts there. And so, yeah, I wonder about stuff like that. Where it's like, well, how much stuff was never meant to see the light of day? Like, there's an option on there where you can say that this is a test, and a test podcast is only available for a short time and then disappears. But somebody could ostensibly find that and download it before it disappears. And I don't know. Anyway, it's just a weird thought. You know, I was giving the license and I was thinking about that, about what can people do, or, you know, certainly stuff has been uploaded before where people were like, "Oh my gosh, I gave my social security number and my credit card and the little secret number on the back of the credit card. And oh gosh, I've got to take that down." But it's too late. Don't be too late, guys. This has been Rish Outfield. I appreciate you listening. And go about your day with a smile. Please. Oh, sorry. Shite. I gotta make a telephone call. Just a second. Let me find my f***ing phone. See, again, it's dark, and it shouldn't be f***ing dark at this hour. It should be light. God, can you imagine when it's winter and 3 hours ago it will have been dark? That makes me want to kill. I'm not going to do the...
It's not a great story.
Yeah, somebody liked it enough to put it in a f***ing book, okay? Sorry, I need to take the hostility down a notch.
So let me say that again.